Hey there, welcome back to Seeking Scale. Andy, how you doing this week?
Doing pretty well. Doing pretty well. Yeah, I was saying that like I'm blocked on a few things, which like normally isn't good, but it's given me a chance to just kind of knock out the ever-growing list of like shit that has to get done around the house or just like all the admin things that kind of pile up in the business. So it's not making a ton of progress this week on my side of things, but like I'm at least clearing out that backlog that just kind of constantly nags at me. So yeah, I take that as a win. How are things on your end?
Yeah, good. Yeah, I mean, I had a similar experience on Friday where the whole morning was basically just email, like clearing some support, like advanced support stuff out that I've been dealing with. And like, I felt so good at like lunchtime on Friday. I was like, okay, it's good. I will live. Last week was a really long week. But yeah, just having the time to not really have anything to do, but just get organized, like puts you in really good mental space for the time when you do need to really focus on that like high glucose stuff. So that's cool that you're taking the time to do that. I think that sets you up really well.
I know you're not like a hyper process driven person, but like, how do you kind of organize your own to-dos? Like, are you like I'm assuming you're not like a getting things done person where it's like you have this clear system for everything, but like, or do you like, I don't know. How do you kind of approach that?
No. Yeah. You know me, you know me too well. Like you know, it's funny though, I see the value in process a lot more than I used to, both for myself and for like the team. Like I was mentioning it to my wife yesterday, I said, like, I'm just realizing that like, I think people want to be led, which is not me, right? Like I think we're entrepreneurs for a reason and it's because like, that's just how our mind works. But most of the world is not like that. And for us to say like, just let's go figure it out. And I don't know the answer is really scary to a lot of people. So like I'm getting more into like the process and the leadership and the structure mindset. But generally, I don't have a process for how I organize myself. I mean, I have like a couple of things that like I need to get done every day. And it is like, unfortunately, like one of those is answering email. And the other is like answering kind of advanced support things. And then the other things are like these kind of higher leverage, like marketing partnerships and product decisions. And like, I just kind of try to touch each of those buckets every day. And sometimes one is bigger than the other. But yeah, I hate to say it's pretty reactive. How about you? How do you kind of look at it?
I don't know. I'm like, I have the ambition of being like a super process driven person, but like, I just can never really stick with them that much. So like, I do use Trello for like my personal life where like, I'll just dump any to do into there. I'm not as like strict about like cleaning it out and like making sure like kind of prioritizing for the week and things as I'd like, but I do try to build like a list of things just in general from big to small. Like doesn't matter what it is. Like if I have to do it, I'm not doing it right now. I'll just dump it in there. And I just found like for me, I would just get a ton of anxiety feeling like there are always 1,000 things I need to do and just like not actually seeing what they were. And so I just feel like putting them down on paper for me took a big just chunk of just like mental management off the plate for me so that I could at least know that, okay, these things are tracked somewhere. I'll get to them when I get to them. But the last few weeks, really, it's just been like, I know I'm not making any progress on these things. Like I've just been swamped with work stuff and even some of the work stuff that I need to follow up on. It just was like never ending. So it finally felt nice to just clear that out and kind of, or at least put a big dent in it so that I could just kind of focus on things going forward.
We use Trello for organizing this show and we have, I don't know, 20 lists of topics in here. And like, sometimes I look at this like backlog and say like, I don't know, like maybe we'll get to this and maybe we won't. Like, do you ever just look at that and say like, this is overwhelming. Like there's just stuff here that's never going to happen. Do you clean those out and just delete stuff sometimes or reprioritize so, regularly? Like how does that work?
So for SaberSim, we use Notion, but for like the project management and like prioritization, all of that, we just use basically the Trello view, like the Kanban view. Yeah. And like there, the lists truly, like, well, not literally, but like they almost never end. And every couple months, as I'm like sorting through for the next quarter or whatever, trying to prioritize a bit, I'll go a little farther and just be like, okay, like we're not going to ever do this and delete a few things. On my personal like Trello, sometimes I used to have this plugin that would fade out the cards if you hadn't touched them in a certain amount of time. And that was helpful. But now that I feel I've just been very busy with work, I'm not putting as much just kind of random things in there. So I'm just almost like pruning those before they even get in. But it's just a constant balance of figuring out what we're working on and what to do now, what things to just ignore, how to kind of navigate that. And I know we've talked a lot about kind of just allocating resources and prioritizing and this and that. And it's just kind of, we could go off on a massive tangent if we haven't already on process, like the actual act of keeping all that together. But I think one thing that might be interesting is to kind of take a step back and just think about more, talk about more how we're operating when it comes to directing the business. Because like you and I know, those lists of projects sometimes don't end. There's always things that could be done. There's always things that we could hire for. And that's kind of what we're dealing with a lot now, is just figuring out, okay, we have some extra cash in the bank from an enterprise payment. MRR is very healthy. What do we need to hire for? Like, do we need to hire? What do we need to do? And I know you've been going through a lot of those discussions too. But I guess I'm just wondering, like in my long-winded rant, when do you decide that, okay, we are going to just keep pouring in our revenue, our profits into building out the team, into whatever other opportunities may come up, versus taking it out, versus any of the other options? Again, we've talked about hiring in general, but like I think we want to go a step above that and just talk about, when is it okay to be profitable? Like how are you navigating all of that? And how are you even navigating my very rambling question as well?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think it's a really good question. I think it's a hard question. People say like, my EBITDA is this, and they know from month to month that exactly kind of how profitable they are or something. I don't, right? And so like, maybe I just don't pay enough attention to it. Maybe I don't log into Bench and take a look at that close enough every month. But I basically, it's terrible. I hate to say it out loud. I basically always want to spend the money that we have. And the reason is like, the other options are not really good options from a like a return on investment, a return on money perspective. If we keep the money in the bank, which we did for really like the first half of this year, we didn't spend more money for the first half of this year. And so we ended up with quite a bit of money in the bank. And now, whatever, we don't have millions of dollars in the bank, but we have a lot more than we need. We're burning just a little bit of money with bringing this developer on now. And we'll go back up to like break even and profitable. You know, we're recording this like the first part of October by the end of the year. And so then after that, I think we'll pretty much just do the same thing, is like break even, be profitable again, get that amount of money back up to where I'm super comfortable, and then start spending it again by hiring somebody or running marketing experiments or, you know, whatever. That's kind of like how we look at it, is like the amount of money in the bank needs to be at a certain point. That's always like the first one. Save up above that to where we know kind of like once we decide to spend money and hiring people, that our burn rate will take us back down below that, but that we expect to get back up above it within a reasonable time frame, which for us now is like a lot shorter than it was like when we joined Tiny Seed and got some money and really like went from like spending money to break even in like 8 months, 8 or 9 months. Now, like those ebb and flow is quicker. It's like a couple of months. Maybe because we're not hiring fast enough. I don't know. And I guess like all of that to say that like keeping the money in the bank is not a good return on the investment. Like it's just sitting there. And me taking it out, like I don't know what I would do with my money if I just got a bunch in my, you know, personal checking or savings account, because it's not doing any good there. We have investments, you know, for like retirement and stuff, but like my active investments, I think our business is the best one.
Yeah, exactly. And I think like that point is super critical in the decision of like, when do I pay myself as a founder and how much do I pay myself? And there's so many variables that go into it. But I feel when, okay, you have this money coming in as revenue and you've got the base expenses, whether it's kind of the server costs, is like the things you need and the bare crew of employees you need to have. And then after that, you have some extra and you can take the money out or leave it in. And it's, to me, when like every dollar you're taking out would be going towards your personal expenses
not savings, not anything else, it's just like keeping you and your family going, then yeah, obviously that's pretty important. But when you have those expenses covered, then to me, it really becomes the question of, what am I going to do with that money? If sure, maybe I would invest and put it in a retirement account, or I could leave it in the business. And then it just comes down to a question of, what are those opportunities in the business? Like, where could I actually put this? And that's something that I think right now, like I don't do a ton of analysis on that, because there are just so many, in my opinion, obvious things we need to hire for, and just like things that I feel like in the product, in wherever else that we could invest in, that are holding us back. So it's just not a question of being like, well, I could get X percent in the markets, or this is maybe going to work. It's just like, this is just obvious to me. But do you think there's a point for your business where it's going to get murkier, where it's not as clear that making these hires are going to have a better return? Like, how do you think about that? Or is it something where it's so far off, you're trying just not to think about it?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there will be a point where it gets murkier, because like, as I think back about like a year or 2 years ago, I would have thought, man, with three developers, two, you know, marketing people essentially, and a full-time support person, like we couldn't possibly need anything else, you know? And like, and then sitting here today, I'm like, oh wow, we, you know, we could double that, or double those number of people at least. And I could feel pretty confident in hiring those people. So I don't know, from a like an emotional perspective, I don't know. The thing I think about though is, I think I heard Christopher Gemmer talk about this on maybe Startups for the Rest of Us, was like, the longer your business goes, the more you deserve to get paid, you know, because like your value to the business is higher. Like as you're just getting started, you know, you don't pay yourself anything, and then you pay yourself like 50 grand a year just to do something. And then you pay yourself like a market rate, like you would get paid if you were at a real job. But then at some point, like I do think there's a point where like you get to this level where, you know, you're doing a couple $1 million a year maybe, and you're like, I want to, you know, take some off the table, but like I need to be rewarded for all this work, because like it could go away tomorrow, you know? But also I think that like, and this is more of a long-term thing, I think that this notion of like, I'm just going to pour everything back into the business and never truly be profitable is a bad sign to potential acquirers and like the IRS even, you know? It's like, you can't just never be profitable, I think. So while I say that we basically want to put everything back into the business, we do follow like a very light version of profit first, where money goes into the main account. Some of that money is taken out into separate checking accounts within the same, like, you know, Chase dashboard or whatever. And like, I can't touch that money, you know? And so every year we do have money that's set aside, and it's just, you know, savings or whatever. Because I do think that like, one, as we continue to grow, like we should make good money one day, you know, like really good money. And then I think also, like the business itself should be profitable to show that like it's a really good business, and someone coming in could, you know, make 250 grand a year or pay themselves and their partners, you know, nice dividends every once in a while. If you are basically saying by your financials, you have to put everything back into the business, then that's not like the best business ever, you know?
I just feel like there's so much nuance where at the end of the day, it depends on what you're ultimately trying to build, because frankly, like, for some of those super fast growing tech companies that are kind of in the more traditional startup world, if they can keep pouring money into the business and keep incredible growth rates going, no one's going to care if they're making a profit or not, because why would you want to make a profit when the returns are so high in the business and they're not really diminishing? And so I think where it can get dicey is that in our more normal world, we're not really all shooting for those billion-dollar outcomes. And I think if you are in a business that is plateauing, it probably makes sense to cut down costs probably significantly from where they are now and just pull cash out. But I think if you are in a business that's growing, as long as you can put that money back in and it returns a higher amount, I just feel like that has to be the right play. And it's, I get what you're saying. And this is something I've gone back and forth on a lot. And before we had that stretch due to COVID where we had zero revenue for 4 months, I was perfectly comfortable with zero salary and investing my salary in hiring. Because again, like the need was just so obvious there. And I felt that I'm an owner of the business. And so if I can increase the value of the asset significantly, that more than offsets the lack of salary. And I think it's just figuring out what game we're all playing. Because if the goal is an exit, I think it's foolish to sort of, foolish is the wrong word, but it's like, it all depends on risk tolerance, but the highest like ROI outcome is going to be putting that money back in the business. Because when you're taking it out, you're paying taxes on it and it goes in the bank, and sure, you can put it into your retirement account. So maybe you can get some tax deferred status there and you can invest in the market and you can diversify. But when you can invest it back in the business, you're getting that, you're not paying taxes on that. It's compounding within the business at a very high rate. And I just feel like mathematically, that's got to be the play, as long as you have some confidence that it's going the right way. But at the same time, like I'm saying that as someone with no kids and like with other streams of income. So it's easy for me to like, not all my eggs are in this basket. And that's where it just gets tough to navigate this, because we're all in different situations. We all have different outcomes in mind. And there's just no easy answer. But I think it's thinking through kind of to the end, what are you optimizing for, is probably one of the more important things you can do. Just make sure you have things right. And like for your business, do you see it as being an exit someday, or like maybe, or definitely, or just kind of how would you rank that as an outcome? Like, what are you ultimately trying to build?
Yeah, no, and I wanted to get your take on this too, because it's changed a lot for me in the last 6 months, probably. When we joined Tiny Seed, yeah, a year and a half ago, really, the goal was 100%, like, let's get this thing going and sell it. That's a big reason why we joined Tiny Seed. It's just like, do everything we can to accelerate that growth. Now, you know, I heard this said on another podcast that like, this is not my legacy, you know, but this might be like the thing I do for basically the rest of my working life. You know, I'm 40. So like, I don't want to start over. Starting over would be so much harder than just doing this. This is a good business, you know, it's not going anywhere. And again, talking about like that ROI or that leverage is like, if I sold this business and started another one, could I really like 10x the potential we have here for me to have a really great business and life and balance there, and maybe an exit in the future? Could I do a lot better starting over somewhere else than I could do here? I'm coming to think maybe not. Maybe like a little bit, but is that little bit better really like what I'm looking for? Because like, I don't want to be like Bezos or something, you know? I just basically like want to have a really successful business, because that's part of my like identity and like my worth is like, am I good at this and do I create value? And like, do we have a cool place to work and is our team happy and stuff? Like that really is what gets me going. And then like, at some point, I would like to have that thing that changes my life, you know, but it doesn't have to be like $1 billion in the bank. You know, it needs to be like enough to where I don't need to work anymore. And that's just not a huge number. Like that's a huge number, but it's not out of the realm of possibility as things are going. How do you think about it?
We're in a weird space where it's very niche, at least with our current positioning. There are ways for us to branch out and kind of expand the market we could go after. There's different ways we could kind of change the types of services and products we offer. But like staying with what we're doing now, there's definitely a ceiling of low millions a year for ARR for us. And like, that's obviously, like, I would never complain about that. But with that in mind, it's definitely shaped how I would structure our growth, because I'm sure I can always find more people to hire, like more jobs to be done, more things to have our team do. But I do feel as though we're going to hit diminishing returns relatively quickly. And so the way I see it is right now we're not there and we'll keep hiring at a good clip until the things that our team is working on are just more nice to haves, more experimental, more whatever. When that return gets less guaranteed, when the potential outcome of it is much lower, then I feel it's okay for us to say, okay, like we're going to keep a small core team. We'll continuously hire support to keep up with the incoming demand there, but we're going to operate profitably. We're going to pull out cash because I don't think the returns will always be there on the growth side if we kind of keep the business structure the way it is now. It's kind of just me planning ahead a bit, but I definitely see it as an exit's not off the table by any means. I do think there's the potential acquirers would have to be more strategic. It wouldn't be something where we would list it on a broker and it would get bought just because it's very technical and like in a very specific way to this market. And like, it just wouldn't be worth the time for someone who's not in this space already really to do it. So I wouldn't rule out a strategic acquisition down the road, but we're more just operating. Let's get to whatever our scale like is. Let's get to that path ASAP and then operate as a profitable business. Unless like I'm just wrong. Like unless we keep finding these places to hire and to expand and get solid returns. But I just feel like we're not an industry, we're not like a niche that allows for that. And so that's sort of been my thinking. But again, I'm sure it's going to change a lot. Like it already changed when we went through that stretch of no revenue. I'm now doing the 50K a year salary to say, okay, this is enough for me to just like get some compensation because like it doesn't change our standard of living, but I do think I should get some rewards, even if that's kind of an ego thing. But I also just don't want like us to grow in a way where me taking that much off the table is enough to just like disrupt the company. Like I want us to keep growing and like push the lines of profitability, but do so in a way where it's less risky than we kind of had been before. Like I can't even imagine being one of the high growth startups that they're going to run out of money in 6 to 8 months. And like, that's the plan. And then like, you got to hope you can raise that next round because you have literally no money just down the road.
Stress,
like, I can't imagine that.
No, stress would drive me nuts. I mean, we've burned enough to where we'd run out of money in like a year if nothing changed, but that's a long time to, you know, grow into that burn rate, you know, course correct if we had to cut costs. That's a long time. And you see it changing every month that like that burn rate's getting smaller. And yeah, running out of money in 6 months would not be my style.
No, and I was kind of not necessarily going to that place. I mean, it's hard to even say because we were working with contractors. Our revenue is just so variable to begin with, where I don't think we ever had a crazy burn. It was more just if the trend reversed, because we would have these months where back like last year, we'd have months where we grew 80%, and you just have these huge bursts at the big beginning of a new sports season, and then it would kind of slowly trend downward, and then you'd have another burst, and it was just really hard to know where it was going to shake out long term. And so we wouldn't like assume this MRR is 100% like going to stay. We'd always be somewhat cautious, but we definitely were less cautious than we are now, just seeing how quickly outside factors can impact it. And so that's been, for just peace of mind for me, has been shifting more towards contractors has helped, because it's like that way I can feel we can spend the vast majority of our cash flow on temporary hires. And if things change quickly, we have enough cash in the bank where we could have kind of a smooth transition for them. We wouldn't be like laying off W-2 employees who had left their job to join our team and this and that. It's just a much more flexible workforce. And that I feel like is really allowing us to have the best of both worlds, where we can go after growth heavily without worrying as much if like we overhire, just because it's much easier to correct.
Well, I know what we're talking about next episode, which is full-time versus contract team members, because I mean, we've definitely done both. And it's not a right or wrong. It is a lot of different considerations and pluses and minuses. I mean, definitely like the cost flexibility of a contractor is there. But I mean, I think things like dedication to what you're doing is probably like against that and like going that extra mile and think, yeah. So, I mean, we should really talk about that because I started very much there. And now like this new developer that's starting for us on Monday is like in the States and like he'll be W-2 and he'll be our fifth W-2 person. Like fifth person in the state, fourth or fifth person in the States. And that just like blew my mind. But like, I think that there's real value. And some of it is intangible, but I do think that there's like value there if it's the right fit. And so maybe that's maybe like, when is that the right fit? And when is it not necessary is the discussion.
What made you decide to go full-time like employee with this most recent hire?
The idea at the beginning was to hire a part-time developer. And we put this job posting out and got no responses from like qualified candidates. And so that made me say like, what is like the deal here? Because this sounds great. Like 20 hours a week, just working on WordPress. Like this is great. I think that what we have seen is the best people aren't just sitting around with half their time available. It is like a large part of why we didn't get any traction there with somebody that we really want on the team. And that like the best people already have jobs. And so it's our job to kind of go and lure them away from what they're doing now to working with us. We very much didn't want, we weren't looking for someone in the States. This guy happened to be like by far the best candidate. And like there's a lot of cost stuff that goes along with that, that that's a negative. But I think what we look at is like, and this is like really, I don't like to say these kind of things, but like, we're building like a team for the long term, you know? And like that sounds really like cheesy and stuff, but it's true. Like we are building a team for the long term and a company that is much bigger than me, hopefully. Doing that, I think you gotta just spend money on people because ultimately, like that's all that matters is what I'm seeing is that like all that matters is like the people on the team that are able to do the things to grow the business faster than I can and make it, you know, more stable and valuable as a business, whether that's valuable to me as the owner, or if we go to sell it. Yeah, I mean, I think kind of like really embracing like people as investments and really like the biggest investment we can make. And like a year ago, I would have heard that and said, that's so cheesy. Like, I'm not aligned to that. And like maybe now, like I think we've seen it and it started with Denise probably is like, we invested in her. She was our first W-2 employee in the States and she's just changed how we grow. And then like bring on Matt and now bring on Alec, this developer is like, if we show to the person, hey, we are invested in you. We want to provide you what you need so that you can come to work and focus 100% on us. I think we get more out of that than the financial benefit of a lower cost in a contractor, you know?
Yeah, that honestly was my thinking leading up to when we hired a W-2 senior engineer in the US last like February. And it was gearing up for us to enter the baseball season, which is one of our best seasons. We were really looking for some redundancy for Matt, who is the founder who started the company, because the product is just, there's so many moving pieces. We're getting data from so many places. We have to normalize it. We have to then, it has to kick off these simulations that get stored in this database. And it's just like, there's so much shit that has to get straightened out and was built by Matt, who pretty much like taught himself how to program to build this. And so it's not always structured in a way that an outside developer would be able to easily figure out. So when something breaks, he has to really be the one to go in and fix it. That's just not like a sustainable solution. So we were really hoping to bring in someone who'd be a true team member and could really take on some ownership of the code and just act in a way that a contractor is simply not expected to. And then, yeah, basically like a month after making that hire, yeah, revenue went to zero for a while. We kept them on through that period. It's really hard to find that person. And I think we could have done it. I think through more better onboarding, more training, all these other things, we could have gotten them there. But it just, the experience with having the revenue just go away kind of just scared me from that, where I'm just like, okay, this is what we want to do. We also found a great senior front-end consultant who kind of refactored the front end of our app and is making it easier for us to now hire someone else to come in at a much lower cost and kind of take over from there. But just kind of was like, okay, we tried that and it's not that it didn't work. I'm just a very impatient person. And it was like, we don't have the time right now to focus on building the perfect forever team. We just have to get this shit done now. And it's kind of just like going in a different direction where it's like, I also don't want to take the risk of having someone else leave the job and come join us. And then like, what if something happens again and we can't keep paying them? It's like, I am with you in principle, but yeah, the experience just kind of scared me off of it. And so now we're just kind of saying, okay, Matt, take the time to, you know, we got to pull you off the product a little bit so you can clean up the back end and make it so that someone could come in here and actually have a chance of succeeding. And then we're going to kind of do like nearshoring, where basically we're going to work with some developers in Latin or South America to knock out some of the projects. And hopefully we can build out some tools and things where it doesn't need as much of like an engineer to come in to fix the problems. But we'll see. Like, it's just kind of, I don't know, like I agree with you. I just like, it just kind of, I just feel like right now we just have to get shit done. And I know I'm taking a short-term view right now, but I feel like I have to, because that was the other issue is like when the code was such a mess, we were trying to onboard a new developer, but like, we also want to move forward on the product. We want to do all these other things and we just never prioritized it as much as we should have. And that made us realize like, okay, we need to, rather than dealing with the onboarding, let's just go to the root of the problem and clean things up ourselves. But once we do that, it just seems like it'll be less, we don't need someone as dedicated if the whole system is running smoother.
I'd be interested if like, if COVID hadn't happened and your revenue hadn't gone to zero, do you think that person would still be on the team? Were they a good hire independent of the all this craziness?
Yeah, it wasn't his fault by any means. And like, that's the thing is that it was having a W-2. I take having a W-2 salary on the books very seriously. And I don't want to mess around with that. To keep him going, we put in a good chunk of cash to sustain him and the rest of our payroll when we had no revenue. And like, I wasn't just going to like let him go over that. But at the end of the day, there was still just so much uncertainty. And we hadn't made the progress we wanted to, more through our lack of putting the resources behind onboarding, because we're trying to put them towards a product and all this other stuff that like, I think if the cash wasn't an issue, he would still be with us. And we would have been, at this point, we'd have had to figure out a way to actually like get him on board, clean things up and all of that. But yeah, it was really the COVID going to zero, just like put a ton of stress on me. And this made me just think like, all right, like I can't keep expecting myself and the other partners to like put in cash to fund the growth. It was just kind of a mess. But at the end of the day, we got a lot of clarity out of the experience. And yeah, it's making us go more of a, not mercenary, like hired guns route. Because I've worked with companies where that's more the approach, where they hire you to do a very specific job and that's it. And I don't like that either. So I don't know, it's just trying to find some middle ground.
I mean, it's risk tolerance, right? Like you guys had a negative kind of experience. Now, like your risk tolerance is less, I think, than, and like, what are, you know, like the, somehow like the certainty of the business was kind of questioned, right? You're very rightfully saying like, hey, we need to stay nimble. We need to, you know, plan in short spurts and like financially like obligate ourselves in like low amounts and in, you know, kind of risk-free ways, more risk-free ways. And I would assume as that stabilizes like emotionally for you, that you will get to a point where you can kind of say like, okay, you know, there's money in the bank. We're growing pretty consistently at, you know, 8 or 10 or 30%. Like hiring this person is like a pretty calculated move that you're comfortable with, you know? And that's just not like the last 6 months have been hell for you. And so understandably, that's right. Not like where you are, you know?
Yeah. And that's what made it weird. Where, I mean, we did have the famous V-shaped recovery and have kind of continued growing from there. But it's just, I don't want to bet that this will continue indefinitely. There's a lot of weird economic considerations to consider. Like, it just so much going on. But to kind of tie all of this together, I mean, it really comes back to how I ultimately balance growth versus profitability, where I want us to, and also risk, where it's like, I want us to take advantage of the opportunities in front of us. But at the same time, just because there's a deep backlog in a certain area of the product or a certain part of the stack, whatever it may be, I also don't think that means we need to hire someone to do that job indefinitely. Like, I think a lot of what we're looking at is the projects. And once we knock these out, I think the person who can maintain that once things have been fixed or once things are cleaned up or whatever it may be is a different person than the one to fix it. And so I feel like the best way for us to allocate our capital is to split it up in this way. Say, okay, here's this project. We need someone who can go in there, understand the legacy code, get it cleaned up, get this running. And then afterwards, we probably will hire a full-time engineer who can just kind of also give Matt that redundancy, but be working on a system that is properly engineered, documented, tests, all of that. And just it will require a different skill set. And so kind of just taking that project-based, contract-based mentality, I feel like gets us the best of both worlds.
Yep, absolutely. And it really is bringing it full circle, because I think, like, yeah, balancing growth and profitability is like kind of prioritization of like what you're trying to do with the business, with like the where we are and the resources we have and stuff. And I think it's like certainly never ending and like always changing of like, okay, we're at this point and we think this bet will pay off. Yeah. And just kind of how to think about that risk, which, I mean, you're a great person, like with your gambling background, like a great person to think about those risks. And yeah, it'll be interesting to see how that evolves, I think, for both of us, like, you know, over the next years.
It's always evolving. It's always, and that's the thing, where it's, I have my ideas and you have your ideas of like what the next 5-10 hires could be, when they'll happen and all of that. And then if the hiring will slow down or whatever else it is, but we can have those ideas, but as we really just have to keep evaluating them, because so much can change so quickly. And I think that's ultimately what I feel like is the important part, is just being somewhat deliberate about this while knowing you have to be nimble and have to be flexible. But the joys of entrepreneurship, it's always something. It's always something, but just trying to enjoy the process, I guess.
Yeah, for sure. I wouldn't have it any other way. I mean, this is a ton of fun, right? It's
yeah.
Like the best game ever that actually is, you know, your job too. So yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, no, we're fortunate. And that's the thing. At the end of the day, solving these problems, what I've had to just realize is like, there's never going to be a day where, oh, there's just no problems to figure out. It's the problems are, if anything, going to get harder, because we've have other people in place to solve the easier ones. And so it's just kind of coming to terms with that and starting to welcome that. Because if I can't do that, then this is not the right path for me.
Yeah.
But yep, I'm optimistic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Cool, buddy. All right. Fun episode.
Yeah, it was great catching up.
Yep.
All right. See you guys.